This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Media Explode, episode 42, What We Watched Over the Holidays.
As the winter winds litter London with lonely hearts, oh, the warmth in your eyes swept me into your arms. Was it love or fear of the cold that led us through the night? For every kiss, your beauty trumped my doubt. And my hand told my heart, let love grow.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Explode, episode 42, What We Watch Over the Holidays. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Josh Flanagan.
I'm watching you right now.
And Ron Richards.
No one is watching me.
Thankfully.
That explains what I'm seeing. Wait a minute.
Happy New Year, fellas.
I had Ring cameras delivered everywhere.
Happy New
Just
Year.
Just planted everywhere. You can't.
That's what that noise outside was. We are iFanboy, and we normally talk about comic books, but every month, because of the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy who unlocked this show, we talk about non-comics media. And we have not done this show since November, because December we did the All Media Year-End Roundup show, which took the place of this show. And so we're back. We did this last year. People seemed to like it. We had fun doing it. So we're going to do it again this year. We're going to recap the things we watched over the 3 or 4 weeks we had off between the holiday season. We didn't do any shows at all.
And I want to make this clear. This isn't because we were doing a lot of stuff and couldn't think of anything until we did this at the last moment and said, let's just do that again. That's not what happened here. This was produced, prepared. We worked on it for weeks.
Yeah.
I think we started in October.
I had the staff working on it since October. Yeah.
Right.
They've been, I've had all the junior producers.
I just don't want anyone to think that we're phoning a thing in.
No. Absolutely not. So my screen says Ron is going first.
Oh, I'm going first. Oh, hello.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, so in terms of what I watched since
Sorry. I just want to mention, we'll try to spoil anything.
Cause we're not starting with things. Me. Okay.
No, we'll just spoiler warning. Oh.
You immediately got downgraded. I don't like the direction this is going in.
Yeah. Now, Josh, now you go.
I'm scared now.
Anyway, yes, of course, no spoilers. Don't want to ruin anything for anybody and that sort of thing. So in terms of films, unfortunately, I'm sad to report I didn't get to the movies as much as I wanted to over the holidays or at all, in fact.
I'd like to report I haven't been able to get to the movies as much as I wanted to. And I don't know how long.
Yeah, no, but usually, I mean, I do like, and Connor, I feel like you're with me, and Josh, you probably mm-hmm. are too. Like the between Christmas and New Year's is a nice time to go to the movies.
Yes.
Right?
If you haven't been sick for 6 weeks, totally.
Sure, yes,
the
sure.
Case.
Yeah, I was not sick. Yeah. I had a list. They were prioritized of stuff like that. Did not make it to the theater until January 11th. So despite my hardest trying and attempts, I failed. But thanks to the new world of technology and all these awesome companies that are made that are profitable, I was able to watch newly released films in the comfort of my own home.
Sure.
One of those was Bradley Cooper's Tour de Force Maestro.
A prequel to the Seinfeld character.
The yes. biopic of Leonard Bernstein that he wrote and directed, which I will be honest with you, I was here for Carey Mulligan. In all seriousness, going through movies of the last 15, 20 years, anytime Carey Mulligan's in it, it has been a good movie and she has been fantastic.
And that is solely based on the fact that when she showed up, she was a cute British girl with a pixie haircut. And you're like, I'm in.
No, I don't even. I mean,
she's
say
a good actor.
Yeah.
But that initial response, I think. It is for me.
I think it says more about you than me.
But oh, listen, pal, I know you.
No, I mean, like, she is, I mean, from Drive to Inside Llewyn Davis to Promising Young Woman, like, she's fantastic. I she's never not good, as far as I'm concerned.
I am teasing you. She's a wonderful actress. Yeah. However, she's married to one of the Mumfords.
Oh, so I didn't know that, really?
That'll knock you down some.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, that's fine.
One of the sons.
But anyway, all I knew going into it was that Bradley Cooper was working on for years, the 6 years of rehearsing to be a conductor, all that sort of stuff. I did not expect for this to be as challenging / art house as it was. I was anticipating a kind of more straightforward biopic. And have either of you guys seen this? Or?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
Why?
That's not anything on you. No, I'm not like it took swings for sure, you know?
Yeah, but explain why I wouldn't like it.
I feel like someone in your family knew Leonard Bernstein and you're offended by
it. Also, it's Bernstein, as he took that's efforts it. There to point out in the film.
He already said that, so you didn't hear it, but I want that to keep happening.
I thought there were really good performances in it. I thought he didn't know what movie he wanted to tell.
Yes,
I thought
so
much of it was left out. I thought they didn't do anything with his actual professional life almost.
Yep.
He was too close to it, I think. I just think the story was ultimately unsatisfying.
If I may, Bron, before you go, I'm going to give you what I think it's going to be like and what has stopped me from watching it. And it's that you got a guy who's very talented, who wants to impress people with his directing, and he thinks this is going to be his big thing, and I'm thinking he overdid it.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know about that. I'm more aligned with Connor.
The directing was good.
The directing was great. I thought the execution of it was great. I agree with Connor.
The challenge was the story.
Connor, I think you nailed it. I think that there's so much with this as a subject matter. And while I understand the focus on the personal life and the marriage and the relationship, it just left a lot more on the table.
It left so much of his life, like important things out of his life that happened where much of his life was lived without her. And so if we focused totally on her and him, we missed important moments. I don't know. It's tough.
Biopics this is going to be one of those things where we learn that Connor's got like a whole Leonard Bernstein thing.
No, I just, you know, he's a very important.
You didn't correct me, you son of a bitch.
I know. I'm just trying to.
No, but seriously, like, I didn't know that this was an area that you knew anything about.
Well,
I didn't know this was an area that anybody I knew anything about. So
well, he's a very important figure in the 20th century music. Like,
for sure. I mean, in the R.E.M. song,
history,
which I feel like they didn't need to include the R.E.M. song. By the way,
it was a little heavy-handed.
I kind of cringed when that happened. But either way, I was impressed
Andy
by the
Kaufman showed up.
I was impressed by the filmmaking. I was impressed by the choices that were made. It played with the aspect ratio, black and white color, all that sort of stuff. Like I thought, I mean, it was definitely. It was an enjoyable night watching it, but I do agree with you, Connor, that the story was
I just left not knowing anything about him. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't tell me anything about him. But other than that, I thought, you know, it was showily directed, but I thought it worked for the character.
Yep.
I think Bradley Cooper should make a non-music-based film next to see if he can do it.
Yeah.
And I thought the performances were good. I thought she was great. I thought he was really good. He sort of disappeared into the makeup and the character.
Yep.
I was torn when I finished it, but ultimately I felt like it was a missed opportunity because as a biopic, it didn't really tell me much about the guy in the middle of it.
Yeah. So I saw Maestro, and then the movie that I did see in the theaters on January 11th was Poor Things, after hearing about it since the summer.
Real quick question. Is it Poor Things like those poor things, or is it like these are things that are poor?
I think it's like the first one.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was wild. I mean, I forget the guy, Yorgos, I can't pronounce it. What is it?
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos, you know, of you know, previously done The Lobster and...
The Favorite.
The Favorite, right, exactly.
A giant list of movies I didn't like.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And I can't imagine you would like this either, but this was so fantastically out there. And honestly, Emma Stone, I think, deserves all of the credit that she's getting for the performance. Also, Mark Ruffalo was fantastic.
That's always true.
I know, but in another dimension. Like it was a different dimension of Ruffalo, right? But it was really fantastic. I love that it took place not in reality, like in this, you know, whatever, you know, like bizarre world, but it is a bizarre world set in the late 1800s London, or, you know, early 1900s London, late 1800s London, you know, but in the past. And I thought that setting was really interesting. It was at the same time challenging and repulsive as it was heartwarming, and, you know, seeing the journey that Emma Stone's character went on as it is disturbing. It was a real kind of like two sides of the coin type thing. I was not looking at the screen sometimes, or sometimes I was absolutely enthralled by what was going on. I do think it lacked a little towards the end, and that I think that they didn't know how to end it. And so they just kind of wrapped it up very quickly. But sometimes you got to do that. You just got to end the movie. And it's also based on a book, I believe. So
that's yeah. A big out. Yeah, sometimes you just got to end the movie.
Sometimes you just got to end the movie.
I was like, I'm pretty sure ending a movie is a really big part of the process. And
well,
you just...
I feel like a lot of movies just sort of suffer from that.
Right. But you're hard in this one. You're letting him get away with it.
Yeah. No, but this was definitely as outlandish and as crazy as you've heard about it. But it was, again, another fun night at the movie theater for me, at least. But I got to imagine both of you guys would hate this movie.
I liked The Favorite a lot. I hated The Lobster. And so I think he's a tremendously talented and singular artist. He just, his style doesn't mesh with mine necessarily.
Yeah, again, similar to Maestro and Bradley Cooper, like from a filmmaking standpoint, from a production design standpoint with Poor Things, just the production design alone. And like, it is clearly like a lot of the film was shot like in green screen and all this sort of stuff, and not these real environments, but like use that almost as like an asset. Right. Like leaned into it and made these like amazing, like, well, you know, one portion of the film takes place in Lisbon. One portion takes place in Paris. They're clearly not in Lisbon or Paris. They're clearly on a green screen set. But the architecture and the design, everything, like all the production elements of this film were just like really, really, really well done. Glad to cross those two off my list. I still have more to go, but here we are. So from a TV standpoint, I was training for a half marathon that I ended up not running. And so while doing that, it got cold here in New York. So I was running on my treadmill and watching TV. And I had heard that Fisher Stevens had directed a documentary about David Beckham. And I was like, I'll try that. And it was fantastic.
I've heard that.
4-episode docuseries chronicling the life of David Beckham. Now, admittedly, it's sanctioned. I mean, Beckham is the subject of it. There are one-on-one interviews, like, and I heard Fisher Stevens on with Maron, and he's saying how they came to him and they're like, we want you to shoot this, you know. So like, to a certain degree, it's not completely subjective, you know, like
that's the way the world now, like it's ever since The Last Dance, every celebrity wants their own sanctioned documentary series.
Exactly. But as a casual fan of World Cup level soccer and like a little bit of you know, Premier League soccer and all that sort of stuff, like knowing who Beckham was, as a large fan of the Spice Girls in the late 90s, it was just really, really compelling, but really, really well done. Like Fisher Stevens is a really good documentary director. Now I want to watch him. He did The Cove. I didn't even realize he did The Cove. It was surprisingly good. I would strongly, if you have any interest in David Beckham or soccer or anything like that, I would recommend it. It was like really well done. And then on the non-docuseries TV side of things, we spent a lot of time in Apple TV Plus over the break.
Did it hurt you inside? Did it hurt?
No, I'm going to talk about a show that I don't think either of you have heard of, right? which plays into the whole Apple TV Plus marketing scheme. For several months, I've had on my list a show called Drops of God. Have either of you heard about the show?
I've never heard of the show.
Okay.
I might have when you talk about it, because I don't know titles.
So Drops of God, it's filmed and takes place and language-wise in France and Japan, and the show itself is in French, Japanese, and English.
Whoa, what are you trying to show off? You think you're better than me?
No, I'm just telling you about the show.
Do you not do bits anymore?
No, not what I'm trying
is
to
that
get
what's going
this.
I don't know if you want to go backwards. It's a fun show, and this is my role. If you watch sports and no one responds to the color commentary guy, I'm out of a job.
So it was a joint production in those three languages. So obviously we had subtitles on because I don't know Japanese or French. It's actually in the context for this show and for iFanboy, it's actually based on a Japanese manga series, which is similar to one of our old favorite series, Oshimbo. Where it's basically the manga series and the show is about wine, and that's what the Drops of God are.
So
wine.
How did you come to this show?
Well,
so far, nothing you're telling me is something you seem
good question.
You seem
Very
to be
question.
Interested in.
The premise of the show is that there's a French guy who lives in Japan who is like the author of the go-to guide of wine. Every year he puts out a new book of his ratings and reviews of wines and makes or breaks wineries and things like that. The show starts with him dying and we're introduced to his daughter. She goes to Japan to hear his will and finds out that he has this multi-million dollar worth wine collection under his house in Japan, and he is not leaving it to her. Rather, he has set up a competition between her and his top student from Japan, where they're going to compete in three rounds to see who gets the collection, who gets the inheritance. And the first test happens in the first episode, where they are given a glass of wine and they can taste it. And they say, great, come back here in 30 days and tell us what wine this is. And it goes off from there. And through the series itself, you find out about this guy, the wine expert guy. You find about his relationship with his daughter, the relationship with this Japanese student, their family relationships. And it's all done in the context of this competition that the daughter and the top student are competing to get the inheritance.
Did you click on this randomly?
No.
Yeah,
no,
you
no.
Still haven't answered his question. You just gave him more synopsis.
No, I know. Well, that, I just was setting that.
Well, let me
there.
Tell you how it. Let me tell you what it's about, though. So, yeah, but why are you watching it? And then
was it
the
an
dad.
Accident? You fall down and land on the remote, and then you couldn't move,
no,
and the show
no,
just
no.
plays.
So,
were you able to speak Japanese after that?
So months, actually, surprisingly, yeah, months and months ago, I came across an article about it. And what captured me in the article was that the reference to manga, and it compared it to Oishinbo. And for a moment, I thought it was a adaptation of Oishinbo that was renamed. And then I quickly realized that no, it just has, it's akin to Oishinbo. So that's why I kind of stuck in my head, and then just added it to the watch list that kept it out there. And then we needed something to watch. I'm like, let's give it a shot. And we gave it a shot, and it was enthralling. It was great.
How many episodes is it?
I feel like it's 8 episodes. Yeah, I think it's 8.
Okay.
Shot beautifully. You know, you get a lot of Japan. You get a lot of France. You get a lot of wine. If you're into wine, I would strongly recommend it. Yeah, it's 8 episodes.
This French-Japanese thing. First of all, you get a lot of France.
Get a lot of Japan.
When they go over to Japan, a lot of it. Very little Netherlands.
Yeah, but it was very, it's very, very good. I strongly recommend it. Like, both me and my wife are really, really enjoying it. Lots of twists and turns in that manga storytelling kind of style, you know, like, you know, don't see
you have
something.
To watch it backwards.
A revelation happens and you don't see it coming, that sort of thing. So that was Drops of God. Strongly recommend you both check it out. I think it's quality, really, really good.
Okay.
There was so much skepticism in that ascent. Okay.
No, I'm still mystified, but I'm coming.
No, I know. I understand.
It's good. Trust me.
I'm not saying that's the part that's mystifying.
No, that's not it. That's not it at all. It to be like if you told us, like, oh man, I went to this rap festival and these MCs had it.
I found the article. It's an LA Times article. It says what you can learn about wine by watching the new manga-based TV series Drops of God. I was like, manga series, like,
but still none of those words. Yeah. You don't really drink wine. You don't really read manga.
Well, I know I've enjoyed. I know.
Having red wine, you have mangoes.
Right. Hang on. You know that I have there's a soft spot in my heart for food based manga.
That's true.
That's fair.
That's true.
That's totally fair.
That you finally told us something of value.
Yes, I am constantly on the lookout for a good food-based manga.
That
right?
is true. Okay,
all right?
Fair
and
enough.
I've read more manga than you guys are aware of, right? I read Uzumaki. I read like
you don't have a shelf of it. You know, like you're not at the Barnes & Noble picking them all up. We've read that. Come on.
The fact that I saw this TV series based on manga, I was like, what is that? And I read into it, and then I kind of put it on the shelf and then revisited it over the holidays.
I see. Okay.
And it paid off.
All right.
And talk about paying off. The last show I watched on Apple TV Plus was I started season one, and we just finished season one. I know you guys are ahead of me, so no spoilers, but of Slow Horses, the Gary Oldman-led show, which Connor, I think I described to somebody, I'm like, it's like 24 set in London with Gary Oldman, like that kind of spy, kind of thriller kind of show.
Written by the people from Veep.
Yeah, right. And Josh, you had been watching it, and I know you had mentioned it, but I wish I had started watching this.
We've mentioned it several times.
It's fantastic. It's so good.
Connor and I have been going back and forth about it a lot, both on our channel that we share and Sketchwise.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, so over the holiday, I also watched it because I've watched season one and season two by myself because normally when I tell my wife, hey, you want to watch this British spy show? She's like, no. So I didn't. And then she heard us talking about it on an all-media show. And she was like, why am I not watching Slow Horses? And I was like, I don't know.
You had your chance.
So we watched all three seasons during the break.
What drew me into Slow Horses was the fact that Jack Loudon, who was in The Gold,
right.
Well, that I liked, is in it. I was like, oh, I like that guy. Let me see this show that he's also in.
And she
I
was like, Gary, he's very handsome. I was like, well, he's in Slow Horses.
And I'll be honest with you that I was aware of Slow Horses from when Josh initially mentioned it and honestly dismissed it because I didn't like
Josh mentioned
how disheveled Gary Oldman looked in it.
Right. He's hard to look at.
Right. Yeah. That was like, honestly, like all the marketing for it was a bit of a turnoff and like, well, I'm not going to watch that then, you know, and oh man, it's great. It's so good.
I mean, I watched it and I think I said to Connor at some point, I was like, this is better than everything he's ever done put together. And like, not really, but I just was like, he seems to be having so much fun with it.
Well, his character work is terrific. Yeah.
Yes. But also like on the surface, like the character is almost completely a one note character. Now that is not true as you go on, but if you're not really paying attention, it's just like he's like, what's his name? And in the thick of it, you're just like, he's just angry. And he gives, and if you look up like Lamb one liners, they're amazing.
He doesn't really shine until the last third of this first season.
Right. Cause it sets you up to think he's one kind of guy and you realize he's actually slow, the smartest burn with guy him. In the room all the time.
It's a slow horses is
the slow horses. Slow horse.
I'm excited for you to get the next three seasons, the next two seasons. Season four comes out later this year. They're already working on five.
Yeah. Well, I'll give the show credit. I heard an interview with the showrunner. Like basically Gary Oldman said he'll do the show for as long as they want him to.
Yeah.
They've gotten the green light from Apple so much so that they always have three seasons in production. They have a season that's being written, a season being shot, and a season in post, and they're just cycling through. They're following the schedule of these books by Mick Herron or the writer's name, right? So like this is like a modern Game of Thrones, basically, just with like a 24-esque kind of show, which is awesome, right? Because each season matches one of the books.
Yeah, and they're very different. Like each season has been very different.
Yeah.
We watched all three seasons over the break with my mom, too.
I'm not done with three yet. I know you're not going to spoil it.
I'm not going to, but I had a great time rewatching one and two. And I picked up on things I missed the first time, and it was incredibly fun. And three was really great. I think one is still my favorite, then three, then two. They're all good, but that's the order I'd put them in terms of what shows I like the best.
I think one of the things that stands out is like it's a very British show. And by that, I mean, you know, when you watch British shows, you're like, oh, this is produced in Britain for British audiences. And sometimes when they cross, it's British people doing an American show. So like Succession was British people doing an American show. They didn't feel like a British show. But this one to me feels like, you know, like Connor said, British spy. Like we watched a bunch of these.
Yeah.
And there's just something about, I like when those things translate well. Like I like that style, but I like when they translate really well, sort of American audiences, which is thing is sort of doing. What's also interesting is about Jack Loudon is that the whole first season, I'd never seen him in anything. And I was like, he reminds me. He's like, he's part Simon Pegg at times. And then he's part, and he kind of is boyish and a little bit simple while also being, you know, capable. And I was like, maybe he's not a great actor. And then I watched The Gold.
You're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I was shocked at how much of a different bearing he had. His entire presence was different.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed and surprised by that.
His character is not a simpleton by any means on Slow Horses, but he's kind of slowly becomes the comic relief over this course. It's like they take the really handsome guy and make him, he's not hapless, but he keeps accidentally stepping on rakes. And that's what I find funny about his character.
What I liked about it too is that also, at least in the first season at least, it added up to the larger tapestry of the bigger story.
Right.
Like you thought it was one thing. You thought he's always screwing up or stepping on rakes or that sort of thing. But like, no, actually there's more underneath.
He's a very good spy, but he just keeps having bad luck. I will say if you take his portrayal of the character in The Gold and the portrayal of the character in Slow Horses and you put them together, you get my sister and my wife's whisper campaign to make him the next James Bond. That's what's happening right now.
I really like him. I really like him.
They have it out there. They're getting the word out. They're talking to all the right people. That's what they want to see.
Have you heard about this Funke?
It's a terrific show. I'm so happy it's popular. Every time I go on Apple TV, it's like the number one or number two.
I remember for some reason, just watching it, like the second season ended. Maybe you and I even talked about it, Connor. It was just like, well, that was good while it lasted.
Right,
and then you were like, it's going to be a third season. I was like, really? And just now you're like, they've done two. I was like, really? They've done more?
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
They announced 3 and 4 together, so we knew that was coming. And then, of course, at the end of 3, you get the trailer for 4. So that's what they have. Like Ron said, they're always
right. They're just rolling. You know, they've greenlit up to season 5 so far. Yeah. So
whatever.
I'm excited.
It's great. Really I mean, good. Like,
I feel like they make those shows cheap in London.
It definitely seems like this could be a Law and Order of London, you know, like in terms of how they're doing it, right?
But with Oscar winner and legend Gary Oldman at the center of eating it.
The whole cast is really good.
Eating his fucking noodles.
Oh, God. No. Just slurping them up.
So good.
And you just look at him and you just look at his greasy hair and just go, God, he must smell terrible. That's one thing.
I watch it. I think he's not a young man. I hope he didn't gain all this weight for the show.
Yeah.
he's repulsive.
He used to be wiry, and now he's
like when I look at him, I'm like, ugh, I'm uncomfortable looking at his greasy hair, but I'm supposed to be? That's how good and that's how well he's inhabited that thing. And I know that there are other people in the show.
Jack Loudon was in that Fighting With My Family wrestling movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Right?
That Stephen Merchant did. That Florence Pugh's in, too, which I've never even seen.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a way to say her name.
He was also in Dunkirk.
Yeah, lots of people are in Dunkirk.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's Scottish, and he's Saoirse Ronan's boyfriend.
Oh, he is? I had no idea, really? Oh, wow. Well, then. All right. Well, that's the stuff I watched. So there you go.
Speaking of British stuff, yesterday, I did go to the films, and I had been forced to see bad children's movies before that, and I was like, how about Wonka, which is like a kid's movie, but further up.
It's doing surprisingly well. Yeah, it's like $500 million, at the box office.
I am glad to hear that because, again,
from the director of Paddington.
I have all these things to say about it, but if you want to go there.
Ron, let's talk some more about Wonka.
What's interesting is I had no expectations. I didn't know what it was. I do know that at the beginning there was a point where I'm watching the movie and then someone starts singing and I looked at my wife. I was like, ugh, I got over that. It was fine. But I, you know, like the original Wonka was a musical, but just part of me was like, all right, let's go. And I didn't have any expectations of any time. And then like part of the way through it, I go, oh, this is the person that did Paddington. And it's like Paddington and Paddington 2 are excellent films.
They're really good
sort
movies.
Of like Babe and Babe Pig in the City are excellent films. The other thing that I noticed as I watched it, I mean, it was full of British character actors, but specifically comedy TV actors who I kind of recognize. Like, it was chock full of Peep Show people. Patterson Joseph was one of the lead bad guys. You know, and as I kept watching through it, I was like, I'm really enjoying this. And it's very funny and you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit of Jean-Paul Genet and Marc Caro. French movies. It was, you know, they did Amelie. Actually, Caro didn't do that, but Delicatessen, City of Lost Children. Like, it has that sort of, without being completely scary and messed up, it has that sort of whimsy to it. And it also paid a lot of homage to the original movie. It's a prequel. That's how it works. And there's just bits in it that are not direct quotes, but they're things that remind you of it. Like, there's a bit about reading the small print. Actually, Olivia Colman's Peep Show too. That thing was chock full of Peep Show people. It's one of my favorite shows. I thought it was really respectful to the other movie, but without sort of trying to be, they didn't try to like lo-fi it down, I guess, you know, to be like the other movie. And he didn't really try to act like Gene Wilder, but he had some of that to him. And it didn't have that darker edge. And I think that kind of worked because he's younger, you know, and he hadn't sort of developed that yet. I think Chalamet's really good. I don't think he's the world's best singer, but he was good enough at it. As Gene Wilder was sort of good.
Kudos to him for taking the chance on it, right?
Yeah, he wasn't bad. There was nothing to be ashamed about.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's the kind of thing where it's also interesting looking at the marketing of the film where, like, they're not really marketing it as a musical, but obviously because you know Wonka, there will be songs, right? And so, you know, good for him for taking the chance on it, you know, not only to be the, you know, because this is really, like, one of Chalamet's first, like, lead, like, him carrying the whole thing.
Dune
to a certain degree, but I feel
Dune's
like
got a whole big cast though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Cast. Yeah. Like, so this is like,
is this one had a thing full of great British comedy TV shows that American don't know. So that's
true. This is Chalamet or bust. Right. And so like good for him for trying
he
it. Right.
Owned yeah. it. He did a great job. I mean, all like it was funny. I expected nothing. I thought it worked really, really well. And I kind of walked out like, I was very happy about that. My one kid loved my 9-year-old goes, he had a very nice voice. That was his first and only real thing. And the other one said, it's fine. So that's how it works.
It's like two thumbs up for your kids.
There it is. Yeah, kind of.
I was trying to get them to go to that like earlier and they would not go until finally like we all went, including the mother-in-law. Like everybody went to the movies. It was like $700.
Jeez.
This isn't going to be a surprise to anybody who follows me on Instagram. I've been doing a G.I. Joe thing lately.
By lately, do you mean 30 years or?
No, like we're in a spike.
Yeah.
He's in like a deep part right now.
Yeah.
No, like I sort, and I don't really know why it started. I think I do. Some time ago, probably over a year ago, I noticed those G.I. Joe classified toys, and I was like, those are kind of cool. And I held off. I was like, I'm not going to get that. And then one day I was like, yeah, I'll get one. And I got a couple more. So from that, I started reading the comics again. I'm slowly going through them, and I really enjoy it. I don't want to do anything else but read them, but I have other things I have to be doing. And then I don't know why. I know the sequence of events. I was on the Apple TV store, and I saw that they had the entire series of Masters of the Universe for $10. And I thought, I wonder what G.I. Joe costs. And they know the value of it because all those are by episode and they're $3 a piece. And I was like, good on you. But I did find out that they're all on Tubi, a thing that I only know existed because I wanted to watch the documentary on Shackleton. And that's where that was.
Fairly certain Tubi is owned by Fox.
Yeah. They run an ad at the beginning.
For Fox News, for Hannity.
Josh has got some interesting ideas these days. He's been binging it. And he's like, no, those immigrants are a problem.
So... I didn't say the words in sarcasm. I didn't say the words at all. Connor did. So here's my main takeaway is that during the pandemic, we had talked because there was no comics. We talked about G.I. Joe. We did the first special. Did we do the second one too? Like the miniseries?
No.
And we did the miniseries, the Revenge of Cobra.
Yeah.
Five-parter.
I don't remember how far we got into it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, so I sort of skipped ahead in the first season, and I think the seasons are a suggestion more than a rule, because like one of the seasons has like 65 episodes, and another one has 20, and who knows. So I went to like 6, 7, until I basically looked for a character in the screenshot I wanted to see. And it's a lot better than you'd think, but it's also a lot worse. Like, it goes up and down. There's parts of it where I was like, wow, this is actually really good. There's a scene where... there's a scientist. I'm getting the comics mixed up back and forth. The Cobra is really into capturing scientists between the comics and the books. Like, that's their thing. They find a scientist and make them do something for them. It's fantastic.
It's easier than training. Come on.
So this guy comes up with a way to control animals. And the way that he controls it, this is both good and bad at the same time, is that he has a board, not unlike McDonald's, that has the silhouette of an animal from the side. And when he hits that button... it controls that type of animal. And I was like, you're really leaving a lot of open space here, buddy. But what happens is that one of the things is it takes over Junkyard, Mutt's dog. Remember Mutt and Junkyard? Yep. And you proceeds to have a long chase where Junkyard is after Mutt. And Mutt was like, I can't hurt him. He's my best friend. And it goes on for a long time. And it's very dramatic. It's very traumatic and very sad. But I was like, this is amazingly well acted. This is just one episode. Also, the episode is like 20 minutes. They feel very long, but not in a bad way. And this just the one I'm on now. There's some journalists who are trying to be gotcha journalists, and they come. Wait, now I'm trying to remember if that's the comic or not. No, I don't have Shipwreck in the comic, so it's not. And he gets mad that they're talking shit about G.I. Joe. And he's like, you want to see some action? And he puts them in a helicopter and he flies them to somewhere to fight. And I was like, this is way off the rules that you can do. And he crashes it. And at one point, the guy tries to reach over and he punches the journalist before he crashes his plane. This is bonkers. It's just...
It should be said that we're also currently rereading the comics because we're going to do a Booksplode show about them. So that's why there's a lot of G.I. Joe rattling around Josh's head right now.
So like, here's the thing, though. I don't actually watch that much TV on my own anymore. My wife and I watch a couple of things and she falls asleep. And so it takes us a long time to get through stuff. You know, a lot of times I'll play video games at night or something sort of interactive. I am just mainlining these things. I just sit there and watch them. I'm like, you got to go to bed. I'm like, one more. I don't know what it is, but it is nuts.
That's funny. That's awesome.
I'm going to stick with animation and then I'm gonna cede my time.
Okay.
For the record, why don't you watch a lot of TV? It's like I watch 3 or 4 3-hour basketball games a week at this point. And so that takes up a lot of time, but it's fun. Whatever. A friend of mine said, I think that you would like BoJack Horseman, which I had tried to watch the pilot at one point a long time ago, and I poo-pooed it. I was like, I don't want to watch this because I wasn't in the mood when I saw the pilot or whatever. And he said the thing that people always say when they recommend you a show, which is...
it's about depression.
No, it's not really good at first, but if you stick with it for a little while, they get it.
Okay.
Which is true because pilots aren't good, and then they figure it out, and then it becomes interesting. But it's very funny. It's very like, I feel like these are people who grew up with The Simpsons, and they're not imitating it, but you can see those lessons that are put there. It's a dark sort of humor that we all sort of grew up when we watched The Simpsons, like originally. First 8 seasons. Does that sound about right, Ron? first 8-9 seasons before it changed.
Either it was 2000 or 2001, pre-9/11, or maybe post-9/11, but the episode where they visit New York.
Right.
The Flushing Meadows episode. Really, for me, like, that was like, I'm done. Right.
I like that episode, but I know what you're talking about.
Simpsons is on TV all the time. It's on like FXX or whatever, but never an early season. It's always the later seasons. It's never anything earlier than 20.
We will watch them as a family and we'll put on, you know, I'll put on something from, you know, the first 8 seasons or something like that. And those are still real good.
Yeah.
I was just with our good friend Gordon, the intern, and we were someplace with a monorail, and the whole week we were going monorail. Like, we're just
That episode's amazing. You know what's really good? The movie's really good.
Yeah,
the movie was.
But
good.
I stopped watching the show forever. Anyway, I think that there's elements of that there. Then at the same time, there is like a dramatic element about a character. Basically, the premise is BoJack Horseman, voiced by, I literally almost said Joe Bluth. I can't. Will Arnett.
Will Arnett.
It's like the finest acting of his career. And by that, I mean that he's playing this character who was a star of a bad 90s TV show, and that's kind of all he's ever done. So you want to think about like Dave Coulier or something like that. You know, like a really popular show, but it wasn't great, and that's, he hasn't done anything since then. But he's a rich, famous person who's not on anything anymore, and he drinks too much and sleeps around, all that stuff, you know, self-loathing. And there's bits where like he's sad, you know, there's a dramatic part or something, and I forget that I'm looking at cartoon horses. Like, I'm not kidding, like, it's done that well, and like his acting is incredibly strong. There was a really wonderful episode where he had to go to like a film festival, but it was underwater because there's animals everywhere, but there's humans. They don't really talk about that part very much. So he's underwater, there's no dialogue the entire episode, and it was incredible. It was like one of those episodes of television where you're like, oh my God. And, you know, it gets lost in the shuffle because there's so many shows and that's just one more thing on, you know, Netflix that's there. But I don't know, say I'm 3 seasons in or something like that. And it's really impressive and I really enjoy it. And when I finish G.I. Joe, I'm going to get back to it.
Well, BoJack Horseman is incredibly popular. It's not lost in the shuffle.
I'm not surprised, but I figure what I'm doing now is validating somebody who was like, I know, they'd like it if they saw it. I really like it. I think it's very, very good.
Good.
There's a lot of episodes, 77 episodes.
Yeah. Well, I'm halfway.
Ron mentioned earlier that during the holidays is a time we try to see movies. And I was thinking today that my favorite time of the year to see films is basically starting around Thanksgiving and going to the Oscars because, you know, you get all the end of the year great films and I don't get to see them all in that period. So I usually see them up until the awards ceremony. Like once the nominations come out, which happens in 2 weeks, then I make my list of the films I haven't seen from the major films and see those as best I can. So this is the time of year where I'm trying to backfill some of the big releases I didn't get a chance to see when they came out originally. And so I saw in the last month, 5 films, 4 of them were on streaming, just to be fair, 5 films from the sort of buzzy award season films. One was Maestro, we already talked about. I watched Saltburn, which was garbage. I watched Anatomy of a Fall, which I just finished about an hour ago and I'm still mulling over, which is the French film that won a couple of surprise awards at the Golden Globes. Past Lives was terrific.
Yeah.
I rented that on Apple. It's a sweet meditation on time and memory and moments from people from the past, how they can affect your present. It's a very beautiful, mostly Korean, but partially English.
I've heard good things about
film.
It. Yeah.
Really, really, really strong. Yeah. And the one I saw in the theater that I really loved the most of all these films was American Fiction.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it so badly.
I'm not going to spoil it all. Just say that it's gotten a lot of buzz. It just won the Critics' Choice Screenplay Award, which was it totally deserved. And it is ostensibly the trailers and the commercials showing Jeffrey Wright as a writer who is frustrated. He can't sell any books. And, you know, he's black. And so he leans into sort of black stereotype writing to sell a book. And he does it by accident and becomes, you know, rich. That's like 20% of the movie. But it's the only part they're talking about in the trailers. It was a totally surprising film.
I saw the trailer again before Poor Things, and the trailer is hysterical. I mean, like,
funny trailer. It's a very funny movie.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do a lot of comedy.
He plays very deadpan comedy very well.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe 30, 40%, but it's not. The main thrust of the film is about him and his family.
Oh, wow.
Sterling K. Brown plays his brother. Tracy Ellis Ross plays his sister. And it's about sort of reconciling after some major events happen. You know, they're all sort of estranged. It's much more of a family film. I saw him talking about it in an interview. He's like, I haven't really had a chance to play this kind of character before. It's not just a frustrated writer and that part's very, very funny and all that stuff is sort of the driving force of his character. But it's all about the different traumas, not capital T traumas, but traumas your families go through throughout their lives and have to come, it sort of drifts you apart, getting back together. It was a very sweet and funny film. Some very, very funny bits about how Hollywood runs these days. The whole book part's hilarious. And all the stuff you saw in the trailer, that's funny. It's very, very funny. But then it's a very sweet and touching part in the rest of it. Very, very highly recommended. From first-time director Cord Jefferson, who was one of the writers on the Watchmen TV show, who won an Emmy for that.
Oh.
That is on my list as well as stuff I want to see. Oh, I forgot to mention, I did finally see Barbie, by the way.
And?
That was good. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like, talk about being late to the party. Like, I knew all, like, I knew all. I was disappointed in that I was hoping there would be more than what I had already read about. You know, if that makes sense. Like, I read about the Godfather joke. I read about the Stephen Malcolmus joke. I read about all this sort of stuff. So I was like, you know, so like, I kind of feel like I ruined, you know, by waiting as long, kind of ruined the kind of impact, but definitely it was definitely well-deserved, all the accolades it's been getting, for sure.
I tell you, when they made those two jokes in the movie, my wife just looked at me and I was like, I know. I mean, because it's like, it wasn't just like kind of like that, specifically those things.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry.
I laughed also. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah.
If we can't laugh at ourselves, who can laugh at? So then TV-wise, Slow Horses, obviously we talked about already. I watched The Gold finally right before Slow Horses.
What'd you think? Which
the first half was stronger than the second half, but I thought all the way through it was really interesting. I thought the cast was terrific. The guy from Downton Abbey playing a totally different character.
Huge Bonneville.
Killed it. He was so good on that show.
Yeah, really good.
The story was fascinating. They're going to do a sequel, which makes sense, but I don't know how that's really going to work, because in the real life, they didn't really know where they happened to go. Anyway.
That's all.
But I thought it was terrific. It hit a little hard on the class stuff. It almost tried to make these guys seem like they were warriors when they were just thieves.
It was way hard on the class war side of
things. I think they're hitting it too hard.
Kind of England. I mean, that's...
No, but they tried to make these guys who were psychopathic thieves into like heroes a little bit. Uh-huh. And I was like, no, I mean, they're not. But
that guy who's the villain from Mission Impossible, that's the scariest motherfucker on earth.
Yeah. Yes. There's always that one guy.
Yeah. Yes.
We also watched the 4-part miniseries called Archie about Cary Grant.
Oh, how was that? I heard bad things about it.
Jason Isaacs played Cary Grant. It wasn't great, but it certainly wasn't bad. Yeah. I mean, I know a fair amount about his life, so I wasn't totally surprised by most of the things, but it does give you sort of an idea of why I don't want to say he had a lot of issues as a child. And so, you know, his name was Archie Leach. That's why it's called Archie. And he created this fictional persona called Cary Grant. There was a scene in the film very much like the Solo movie where he needs to get a new name. And I was like, oh, God. He had such a traumatic childhood and he had such need for control that it really affected his personal relationships. And that's sort of the crux of the story. I thought it was enjoyable. Not great, but enjoyable. But wanted to mention real quick the ending of Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, which is a show I've been watching for years. It ended its 29-year run this past month. I don't know why it ended 29 years. There was a lot of jokes about that when they had celebrities come on to do testimonials. But I can only imagine it got very, very expensive to produce. It's super high-quality investigative journalism related to sports that's shot all over the world. That's why I can imagine it was too much for a company that's slowly sinking under a crushing amount of debt. But really impactful show, beautiful journalism. It's on the level of 60 Minutes isn't the best journalism on TV. Stories that make you cry. Even the recaps of some of their highlights, I was starting to tear up again just remembering the stories. Just terrific journalism and terrific stuff about sports really made you think. It was a monthly show that has been on for, like I said, 29 years.
I mean, it was an institution, right?
All of these things that were institutions in culture are sort of slowly dying away. I don't know what they're being replaced with. I'm sure there's some fucking TikTok show.
I honestly didn't know it was still on. And I don't mean that like a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it had been around, but I was actually kind of surprised that it survived that long, given the costs and returns.
And it's interesting when you think about it that HBO, for some reason, had this whole real naming strategy that was real sex, real sports, and real time. Yeah. With like, I don't know why they did that, but they did. I'm sorry to see it go. I really am. I think anytime major journalism goes away, I mean, these are guys who are constantly holding FIFA and IOC to account, and no one's going to do
John
that anymore.
John Oliver takes care of that now. You don't need them.
So that was a bummer. And then finally, I wanted to mention a podcast I've been listening to. I'm not totally done with it. I've got 2 episodes left. I was listening to Conan. Albert Brooks and Rob Reiner were on Conan, which is a really fun episode if you want to listen to it. There's one joke in there that just destroys everybody in the room for about 5 minutes that Albert Brooks makes off the cuff, and it was very, very good. But anyway, on the show, Rob Reiner mentioned, and I totally forgot about this, that he did a podcast about Who Killed JFK. That's what it's called, Who Killed JFK, with Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien. Soledad O'Brien also on Real Sports. And it's 25-minute episodes. They fucking fly by. There's 10 of them. So you can listen to it in the course of one work day, and I've got two left. The mystery of JFK's assassination is something that I've been obsessed with in various ways, depending on my life. More obsessed in my younger days, but I've read many, many, many books about it. In college, every Thursday when classes were over about 2 o'clock, my roommate and I watched JFK for the entire semester. So I think I watched it 50 times that year. Used to be able to quote it verbatim, more Gary Oldman. And, you know, in my 20s, I read a lot of books or watched a lot of documentaries. I've been to Dealey Plaza. I've been to the museum and the book depository. I've stood behind the fence at the Grassy Knoll. You know, it's one of the seminal moments in American history that probably changed a lot. But I hadn't really thought about it in the last 10 years, honestly. It just sort of faded from my radar for a while. I've watched the documentaries that come out here and there, the new ones over the last 10 years, but not really been deep in it. But there's been a lot of revelations in the last 10 years that have come out. A lot of stuff that's been declassified. Or people.
There was that agent, the guy that was on the car, right, who spoke up. Right?
Yeah, he's in the documentary. Talk to him. A lot of stuff's been declassified. A lot of sort of deathbed-ish confessions or remembrances. And this show does a really good job of recapping all that. Rob falls on the side of this was a vast and giant conspiracy involving everyone. I don't know if that's true. I don't also necessarily believe it was.
I was about to say, how could you think of anything otherwise? Like, I feel like, and I don't know where you fall on it, Connor, but like, I also have been enamored and not probably, I didn't watch JFK every day, but like,
listen,
you know,
we have something to do.
Fascinated by it. I mean, my mother was fascinated by it. I kind of inherited that. Like we had a copy of the Warren Report in our house. You know what I mean? Right. Like she bought the book when it came out and like all that sort of stuff.
Well, like, people of a certain age and your mom's age and Rob Reiner's age, they were teenagers or so when it happened.
Yeah, no, my mom chipped her fingernail on JFK's car when he was campaigning in 1960. Right. He visited Long Island and they went to go see him. And that was back then when you could touch the car of the, which is an example of, you know, what happened in Dallas and why he was able to get to him. But I think at this point, you know, Connor, I don't know if you agree with me, it wasn't Oswald alone, like at a basis.
There's way too much, like they discuss this in the show. And let me just say about the show real quick.
Can we turn the show into a JFK conspiracy podcast?
Let's do it. The show is entirely scripted, but they try to make it sound like it's a conversation. The only one who can kind of pull it off is Rob Reiner, who's an actor. So that O'Brien can't, the writers, like that's the only kind of grating thing about the show is they try to make it seem casual, but it's totally scripted. So it's kind of stilted. But anyway, the information's good. Soledad O'Brien brings up the point that Occam's razor is usually the right thing. And Occam's razor says this fanatical, you know, mentally ill ex-Marine got really, really lucky, fired 3 shots in a time he should have been able to with this rifle that shouldn't have been able to fire it. And that's usually what the real thing is. Now, Rob goes the 180 degrees, in other words, Cubans and the CIA and the mob all together. Right. I probably fall somewhere in the middle, closer to the Oswald side in that something strange happened in Dallas. We're never going to know what it was, but there were way too many people in Dallas that shouldn't have been there. Way too many coincidences, way too many strange things with Oswald's past.
Yeah.
Something happened. We'll never know.
Echoes. You heard echoes.
The security services, which is the British way of saying it, which is watching so much Slow Horses, was doing all kinds of shady shit in the 60s, which no one ever thought would come out because back then people believed the government and the media without question. And they were involved in some shady, shady shit.
I just don't think there's no way given all the physics and the trajectory, there's no way Oswald got lucky. Someone was up on that hill, and who it was, whether it's the
Brian
mob
or
CIA or Brian Doyle Murray, whoever it was,
he was in the garage.
We probably will never know, but there's no way it was just Oswald by himself. I believe that more than anything.
I think you both need to listen to this. You can get it anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's called Who Killed JFK with Rob Reiner. And it's, like I said, 25-minute episodes. There's 10 of them. You'll fly through it. And there has been a lot of stuff that's come out where I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know that. So, like, there's new information that's come out. There's I bookmarked this, jfkfacts.org, which is the.
Oh, geez. You're getting pulled in.
Getting pulled back in. Where it's the premier place for all the information, which they update daily.
Jesus.
Is sort of the repository for everything, and the host is one of the talking heads on the show. I couldn't stop listening to it, guys.
Between JFK assassination and Zodiac, those two have taken up more time on the internet than I would like to admit.
Okay, pick one, Ron. If you could solve one definitively,
the episodes are more like 35 minutes. It's not a complaint,
there's commercials,
ads.
Okay. Yeah,
fair.
I mean, there's some sort of slightly longer, but they're all about 25 minutes.
Here's what I know is that the fourth episode is called The Patsy, and I'm in.
No, so there's commercial break in the middle, the long one they all do now, but there's also like they do like the coming up next week for 5 minutes at the end. So I just cut that out too.
Can we go back and reflect on how much I love the casting of Gary Oldman as Lee Harvey Oswald in JFK?
Well, You know, when you watch a movie every day for an entire semester, you start to laugh at certain things. Like, we all know, we all laugh at the weird things in Star Wars, like Grand Moff Tarkin with the little head nod and everything. But at the end of the semester, we would get a cake from Wegmans to celebrate the end of the semester. And we had him write, "You're the policeman, you figure it out," on the cake. Because by the end of the year, that line has made us laugh every time because the way he delivers it. And the woman at Wegmans was very, very confused. We had to write it on a card. We were like, no, it needs to say this.
Can we just focus on the fact that in college, where you don't have a lot of time, you know, necessarily to know that the people that you're going to be with are going to be, and you found people to live with who are like, yeah, I'm into watching this every day too. What are the chances of that?
You know,
like you could find somebody who likes it.
Right.
While Connor was doing that, me and Gordon were making enormous Hot Wheels tracks in our dorm lounge.
Sure.
Like, you find your people, I think.
Oh, listen. I'd never thought about JFK or whatever. I know the movie as well as anyone short of Connor at this point. Yeah. Like, it's not like he brought me in. Like, I saw what he saw.
Yeah.
And I'm down too.
At one point that year, I bought the annotated script book. It's like 6 inches deep. And I read that whole thing too. Like, it was a problem. Yeah.
I would like to, and this is giving away a great idea. So if there's some aspiring podcaster who wants to do it and produce it, and I'll have you participate. I would like to do a podcast that focuses on the casting of historical figures. We talked about this when we talked about the James Franco JFK show on Hulu. Remember all that years ago? Like, there is now a legacy of men who have portrayed Lee Harvey Oswald throughout film and television. There's a legacy of men who play Hitler throughout film and television.
No, it's interesting. Like, the idea of who, like all the different interpretations or how you do research. It's interesting.
Because it all stems from my love of the fact of the guy who plays Hitler in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. If you look at his IMDb profile, it's an entire career of playing Nazis. He's played Hitler. He's played Goebbels. He's played, like, all of them. And really, this British actor's livelihood has been based on Nazis.
Right.
So it's like, I'm fascinated by the whole thing.
Yeah. I have two left. The ninth episode is called 11/22/63. So I'm up to that one. I think where they're going to lay out everything that they think happened that day. Anyway, this spiraled in a way I didn't expect, but I really have been enjoying. I had a day where I had to do like a bunch of like spreadsheet, like, you know, just like mindless stuff at work. So I put it on and I literally was like, suddenly 4 hours later had gone by and I was like, oh shit. I kept hitting play next. And all of a sudden it was almost over. Anyway, that's what we enjoyed this past month. A lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Heavy.
What was your
heavy
favorite?
Stuff.
Pick your favorite of the things you talked about.
Ooh, that's that episode tough. With Junkyard Mutt was pretty powerful.
I mean, I don't know how any of us are going to beat that, to be honest with you.
That's true. All right, so we're going to give the award to Junkyard Mutt.
You're my best friend. Come on, what are you doing? He's coming at him. His eyes are glowing.
It broke your heart, didn't it?
It was really sad.
I'd probably go with Drops of God as the biggest surprise.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Not Slow Horses Run?
Slow Horses, I mean, it's really, really good. Don't get me wrong.
You put Drops of God over Slow Horses.
Yeah, by inches.
Whoa. I mean, I want to say the podcast, but also I'm going to say American Fiction. That was my favorite.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I can't
it's very good. All right, so let's wrap it up. So, Ron, why don't you plug some of your stuff you're working on?
Yeah, sure. If you head over to androidfaithful.com, you can check out the newish podcast that's about 6 months old now that I've been doing with Jason Howell, Huntit Dao, and Michelle Roman. Talk about the world of Android and smartphones and mobile technology. It is lots of fun.
Did you cover CES?
We covered CES last week, yes, and this week. Like, CES is so big, you got to do it over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I did the pre, like, we'd cover CES right when it starts, and then we cover CES as then. And it was a fun year for CES, to be honest. And then if you're into pinball, please check out scorebit.io. That's the website where you can find a link to download the app that me and my friends put together that lets you track your pinball scores. It's lots of fun, so check that out at scorebit.io.
Every week, Josh and I, and sometimes special guests, talk about the week's new comics on the Pick of the Week show. And also, if you enjoyed the Junkyard and Mutt talk in the middle of the show, next week, Josh and I are releasing a Booksplode show, which is where we review a trade paperback. We're going to talk about G.I. Joe Volume 1, the first 10 issues of the classic Larry Hama comic book. So if you're a G.I. Joe fan and you enjoyed that talk, look for that show next week at fanboy.com, where all of our podcasts are. And that's going to be fun. I'm not done with the book, but I'm excited to talk about it already. So look forward to that. Like I said, all of our shows are available at iFanboy.com. If you're a patron, thanks for unlocking the show. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Consider being one today. And until next month, I am Connor.
I'm Ron.
Josh Flanagan.
You okay?
Yep.
Did you get sad thinking about Mutt?
No, I got something caught in my throat and I was like, oh, that was more dramatic than I meant. I just had I can't get it out, but it was too late. And so that happening, I was like, I got nothing to say. Normally I try to, but nope. Didn't happen.
But if your stripe strikes at your sleeve, remember spring swamp snow leaves. You'll be happy and wholesome again when the city clears and sun sets.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.